Welcome to Asimov's Spotlight. Here now, another story selected from the pages of Asimov's science fiction magazine.
Victor is used to having gigs like driver, teacher, or administrative assistant. So when his gig time app shows mayor for a duration of only 24 hours, he is a little skeptical. What should have been a quick job turns into something else altogether. Enjoy Mayor for Today, read and written by Fran Wilde.
When dispatch sent me the job, I admit I had concerns. Nothing specific at first, except that the post was spare on the details, which sometimes meant trouble down the road. Spare enough to make my stomach crawl a little as a warning. But I couldn't heed it, not this time. "More details, please?" I said to my watch. The gig time app dispatcher usually sent me tasks like administrative assistant, or driver, human, or teacher, substitute, plus short descriptions. And that was when I was lucky. I didn't always get offers anymore. You don't get a lot of chances once you've taken the wrong job and gotten in over your head. And now my app was lit up with only 5 letters. M-A-Y-O-R. A small rainbow wheel hovered in the empty middle of the O as the app stopped feeding information. More details on what? You go to this town that needs a mayor. You do the job for the specified time. I heard a pop and a snap, as if dispatch was chewing gum again, even though that's forbidden on the job. I didn't know her name, but I liked her voice. It was soothing, except when she cracked her gum. And that one time she had to fire me from a gig. But mayor? And I fumbled with the tiny app. My hands were way too big for how small tech had gotten. No more data showed. I tapped the side of the carbon fiber watch with my fingernail. The rainbow wheel of fail had disappeared, but nothing took its place. Something was loose in the works, but I hadn't had the credit to fix it in a while. Finally, I got the screen to share the rest of the details. Denzai, China, and 24 hours. That can't be right. How can you be a mayor for only 24 hours? There was another loud bubblegum pop. It's pretty self-explanatory, Victor. You go, you sign some papers, plant a tree, you leave, read the scroll. There was no scroll. I tapped my watch again. Ah, there it was. A list of duties. Still, I hesitated. Don't I need to be elected or something? At least in the coastal North American territories, mayors were part of the system, and the system had a separate app you needed to earn with volunteer hours and training sessions. That was long before you could even unlock the collaborator options. No one who was still running gig time could afford that many off-pay hours in a month. So, no system for me. No, in this town, mayor is a mostly ceremonial role. There are a few official duties, like I said, and then you have to file a report, and you're done. Victor, accept the job or pass. A black and white hourglass timer spun next to the word mayor, plus the rating for the job. Pretty high. The pay was amazing, and passing on it would drop me even farther down the queue for the next job. I might not work for a long time. I needed the work. I was taking my daughter to Disney in the spring for her high school graduation. Not the park, the state. Campgrounds, seashore, dolphins every afternoon. Everything was perfect and platinum level expensive, but Elsabet was going to love it. Also, I was trying to save money to help pay for her to go to college. I know, most people had given up at this point, but it was still a dream of mine and her mother's. Accepting the job would get me enough pay for a whole week at Disney, plus some. I looked closer. Airfare? A per diem for meals and incidentals that was more than I'd sometimes make stateside in a couple of weeks, and two nights hotel accommodations in the town's city center. Sweet! It actually looked ideal. Still, I hesitated. I'd been burned by a gig once already. Including the plane flight, that was 4 days where I didn't have to pay time on my rooms here. Of course, the space might get leased to someone else, but I didn't have very much I couldn't carry anyway. That meant more savings, enough for Elsabet to take a few classes in the fall somewhere. Overall, being mayor was cheaper than sitting around my shipping container turned rent-by-the-day apartment block waiting for another gig to come along. Besides, the sun was about to come up, and the container city piled on this side of Williamsburg would be getting real hot. It was March, after all. The mid-season sun bounced right off the big glass towers in Manhattan, threaded all three bridges, and warmed my home like a Tesla beam every darn day of this month. I needed to get out. "Except," I said. "Congratulations, Victor Salazar. You will be the 2,450th mayor of Danzai, China. You'll become one in a long line of mayors who will return home after your stay to share news of Danzai's technological and business strengths, as well as the beauty of its culture and landscape, and the skills of its craftsmen." The dispatcher sounded as if she was reading off a card. I tapped my watch again, and the same greeting appeared, along with an itinerary. Dispatch popped her gum once more. "Sounds great," I said, distracted by the successive vibrations on my wrist that indicated an advance payment hitting my bank account and tickets to China hitting my passport app. I hadn't used that in a long time. I hoped it was still good. My watch buzzed again, growing a little hot on my skin at the end. "Ow." "Danzai took the liberty of updating your visas. I sent them your fingerprints, a blood sample, and eye scans in exchange. Your return documents will be sent when you complete the job." "Thanks?" Dispatch didn't usually require so much data, but what did I know? I didn't usually leave the country for a short gig. "Do you wish to purchase gig insurance?" "That's a scam, and you know it, Dispatch. I already had to pay a fee to use the app. Quit double dipping. Besides, if I had enough credit to buy gig insurance, I wouldn't need the gig." She popped her gum again. "Noted, Victor." I thought I heard laughter in her tone. On the way to the airport, I called my friend Jean to tell her where I was going. Always a good practice in the gig economy. She laughed, a little uncomfortable maybe. "My parents are from there. It's a long trip." "I know. I'm downloading free music and books right now. Mayor, though. Why don't I get gigs like that? You got a great gig just last year." "Line chef?" Jean chuckled again, still uncomfortable. "Yeah, free food." "You ever been a line chef with no training? It's awful. Everyone throws knives at you." She hadn't told me. Had just brought me to-go boxes of pasta and seafood when I wasn't getting any work after the very bad gig when Mimi left me and took Elsabet with her. "Yeah, I had some built-up resentment about that particular gig, but not to Jean. You think people sometimes list jobs on gig time to burn off some excess stress?" It was a question that had nagged me a lot the past year. "Maybe. That's certainly what the line chef job felt like." Jean paused. "Are you sure you want to do this? It is really far, and China's regulations about gigs are probably a lot different than here. Plus, you don't know much about the culture." She was pinging some concerns that made my stomach crawl again, plus more of what I'd waved off earlier before I had the information. Mayor could mean anything, especially a ceremonial one. Some kind of mad profit scheme that left me holding a bag of crime? Possible. Someone working out their issues with authority figures? That had already happened. An ancient Greek-style harvest festival sacrifice? Only heard of that happening once. But no, dispatch had said China was strict about who got to list on the exchange. The greetings showed me the mayor's official seals. It was legit. I trusted gig time. At least, I trusted my dispatch. So I downloaded as many newspapers and documentaries about the region as I could, just in case. And then I caught the SkyTrain to the old JFK terminal, caught my plane, plugged in my earbuds, and listened to books on Miao culture, the history of gold and mineral mining in the surrounding area, and one on the recent effort to preserve local languages. In no time, I was there. Well, not there, Danzai, not exactly. First, Beijing, then a hop to Guiyang by the Guangzhou airport, then one of those slick, low-slung automated half-cars that you lie down in picked me up for the 2.5-hour drive into the mountains. Not a lot of driver, human, gigs here. The drive was beautifully strange, by the way. Near the airport, the late-night security lights of Chimelong Paradise Amusement Park made its giant robot gate statues and the rides with waving tentacles look eerily surreal. Then, enormous bridges and long tunnels punctuated the valleys and mountains surrounding Guangzhou province, where Danzai was located. Both were such vast construction projects that could have been built by giants. And unlike home, the roads were smooth, and the unpolluted sky that night was a glorious deep blue and filled with stars. Only the occasional roar of a semi driving right overhead, shaking the thick car dome, gave me any concern for my safety. I stared at the stars, watching meteorites shoot across the sky occasionally, and listening to the characters in my latest K-drama argue. I couldn't listen to any more facts that late at night. Besides, I'd learn everything else I needed to know in the morning. Eventually, the self-driving car pulled to a stop in front of the main entrance to Danzai Town. Tiny fairy lights hidden in the tall bamboo lit up a thick, brown wooden gate carved with bulls' heads and great branching horns. I walked beneath the gate, headed for the best hotel in town, Wanda Danzai. After taking the small stone bridge over a koi-filled stream right in front of the hotel, I was disoriented. The hotel's lobby seemed decorated by constellations, bright white dots and lines over the deep blue sky. As my vision got used to the dim light, the constellations resolved into ceiling-to-floor indigo blue hangings with batik patterns carefully drawn into them. I recognized elaborate butterflies, birds, fish, and large multi-legged creatures that could have been shrimp or giant millipedes. I wasn't sure. The hangings fluttered in the late-night breeze, making the animals dance. I held out my wrist so the reception bot could scan my watch for passport and reservation information. The blue light of data transference felt comforting after all the strange things I'd seen on the way up. The reception bot disgorged from its center a packet wrapped in a blue armband. It contained several envelopes of stone tea. "Very good tea for family only, not guests," the reception bot said. Then it lit up with an arrow pointing in the direction of my room. I dutifully followed where it pointed. And that's when I got the first hint of trouble. I'm not saying that the hotel reception bot was faulty. There was a room in my name, but someone else was already in it. Several someone else's. Found that out the hard way. I took the elevator down a level of the fancy hotel to where I could hear the river. Walked down a small tiled hallway lined with more tapestries, and opened the door to room 250. A family of what looked like at least 6 adults were crowded in that room, with several trying to sleep on the bed and others curled up on the sofa and, uncomfortably, on the desk when I keyed my way in and turned on the lights. One was on the toilet. Wow, did I beat a hasty retreat back up to the reception bot. I slipped my wrist beneath a reader and it spat out my room number again. 250. That's wrong, I told the bot. There's someone in there already. A lot of someones. The bot did some upper-level algorithm wizardry that took a while and finally spat out another key code for my watch. Room 245. It was starting to get light out. I'd traveled for over 20 hours and I didn't know what day it was. That was fine, though, because my gig time app said that tomorrow was Mayor Day. My room this time didn't have anyone in it. It was spare, a bed and a nightstand, a desk with a kettle and two cups, a starlit river just outside the window. But I was so exhausted, the river didn't matter as much as the soft white pillows. So I settled down on the bed to sleep. I only woke up when my alarm went off a few hours later for breakfast. Jet lag had me by that point. Everything felt soft and endearingly hopeful. At least the sun wasn't coming through my single window in Williamsburg. At least here the river outside did not shine with the light of 1,000 glass towers. At least here, the bridge over the river was a walking bridge, not compounded with cars. And here, at least, was a town that, ceremonially, would sort of be mine for the day. I tried to dress like I was ready to shoulder the responsibility. Finding the restaurant for breakfast meant walking through a maze of hallways with my stomach growling. Some halls were lined with the now familiar blue and white tapestries, but others had bird cages artfully arranged on the walls, and one had a bull's head carved on wood. I passed that birdcage display twice before I realized it was the same one. When I did finally reach the restaurant, I was delighted to see a buffet of delicacies that back home would have fed an entire shipping container apartment for a week. Better still, it looked like everyone else had already eaten and departed, so I had a trencher full of tea and soy-soaked duck eggs, two kinds of rice congee, coffee, bacon, fried eggplant, and squash all to myself. And a real waitress waiting to answer questions. She looked almost young enough to be my daughter, and when I spoke into my watch to translate a few phrases, she laughed at me like my daughter did, a lot. Both of them, it seemed, thought I was an idiot, but for different reasons. "Mayor for today?" she finally said, gesturing at the indigo blue armband I'd been given to wear when I checked in at the hotel. I nodded and smiled. My chest puffed out a little bit. I'm not sure why. She knew as well as I did that this was an entirely ceremonial position. "Number 2450, I said wryly. "Wear comfortable shoes, she cautioned. "More congee?" I took the congee, flavored with pumpkin, and a cup of tea back to my table. I had only brought the pair of shoes I was wearing, sturdy Chelsea boots that had seen better days, and enough clothes for the 3 days I was to be in Danzai. The app had stipulated that I needed to dress professionally, and that was more clothes than I'd usually pack for a gig. While I ate, I called up Jin on my watch. "Made it," I said. Jin's face appeared in a tiny and fuzzy hologram above the glass, since I'd only paid for the standard international package, not the double platinum or the extreme gold-plated platinum packages that would get really good signal. Her lips moved a beat after the sound came across. "Did you meet your employer hosts yet?" "Not yet. I have to go to the municipal office. They sent me an armband." I pointed to the blue and white batik strip of fabric. "But they'll give me my assignment there, after breakfast." I'd eaten and had been paid a portion up front. I was feeling pretty good about myself and my prospects. Upon reflection, that could also have been the jet lag. Still, after walking across the town in the chill air, I was definitely feeling energized and ready to work. Indoors, if possible. The main street was lined with stores, and groups of cheerful women in local regional costumes passed by, which was slightly unsettling. But there were also children in quilted coats and elderly couples trying to wrangle them, and tourists photographing everything. Even early in the morning, my, at least for the day, little town was bustling and prosperous. I couldn't wait to learn more about my duties. Someone had said something about planting a tree. I hadn't ever done that, not even in school, and I wondered if it would be a real tree or simulated. A few more brisk blocks across another square, past a movie theater and a large set of steps surrounded by more bullhorn carved poles and drums stylized in brass, also decorated with bullhorns, and I arrived at the municipal office. There was a long line outside. I wondered at all the people there, some of whom wore local clothing and shared features with the families I'd seen on my walk, and some who looked, like me, from elsewhere. I listened to the quiet conversations through my translator, and while I heard English in three different accents, the translator told me I also heard Yoruba, Spanish, Mandarin, and Hindi among at least 100 people. Everyone, especially those at the front of the line, looked exhausted, a little dingy, and frustrated. Was this my constituency for the day? Lost tourists? There were a lot of people. "Excuse me," I said into my translator when I finally threaded my way through the crowd and found the desk of the city manager. "I'm your mayor." I presented my wrist and my left sleeve with the armband. "Go to the end of the line, please," the woman there said in crisp English with a hint of weariness. "The city manager has gone out of town on important business, leaving the mayor in charge. Read this." She slid a half piece of paper across the desk. I followed where she pointed, back to the end of the line. As I walked down the other side of the waiting line, I could see that every person in line wore a similar armband to mine. It started to rain, and the paper I was holding began to turn gray as the ink ran. I read as quickly as I could, but some words were already lost. "Welcome, Mayor Number Blank. Due to a snag in procedure, your term as mayor has been suspended temporarily. You are invited to remain in Denzai until your duties are fulfilled." "What does this mean?" I asked the person in front of me. They looked at me sadly and said in Spanish, "I wish I knew. I got here yesterday and no one will tell me anything. The city manager said she'd take care of it, but she hasn't returned yet. Some of these people have been waiting for weeks." "Months," a woman near the front corrected him. I wasn't dressed for the chilly, damp weather. The weather app had been telling me it would be in the 60s or higher for the 3 days of my stay. I wore what I thought would be good mayor clothes, an Oxford shirt, chinos, and a blazer. They'd cost me a quarter of my advance pay. Others in line had taken to layering themselves in gear purchased from the local shops. "Do we have to wait here until our number is called?" I finally asked. "Yes, every day. The first part of the gig to be completed is report to the mayor's office and accept your commission," someone much farther up the line said. His familiar face made me blush. It was one of the people I'd burst in on in the room assigned to me last night. He didn't seem as concerned. "We do the first part of the job, but none of us can do the second yet, or the rest of it." As the day went on, I noticed that all the people in the line were wearing watches with gig time apps. They tapped at them sometimes, and each time they did, the gig time app showed job not yet completed. A few groaned and stretched their backs and calves. Standing in line was hard work. Comfortable shoes indeed. The waitress from the restaurant came by with tea in tiny cups. "Red tea from our own mountain farm," she said. The aroma was brisk, and the warmth of the tea helped me forget the chill rain, but I began to grow anxious. I needed to get back to New York and start really earning some credits if this gig wasn't going anywhere. For my daughter, for our trip, and for her tuition, and maybe to keep my old apartment. "Does anyone know what the holdup is? Where's the city manager?" From far up the line, someone mumbled something that the translator app shifted to "won't leave." "Excuse me?" my neighbor said. "Can you speak up?" A British voice, a young woman wearing a backpack and a colorful hat, said, "Mayor number 2328 won't leave. It's been almost 4 months. The city manager couldn't get gig time to fire him. Some bug in the system. And we can't complete our gigs if that mayor doesn't." As my neighbor groaned, the truth sank in. If I didn't finish the gig, the app wouldn't send me my ticket home. We were trapped here by an algorithmic rule of the gig time app. If you're at all able to do the job, you have to stay with the gig until it's done. All of us, at least 120 mayors-to-be, we did a head count, stood there until we were dismissed for the evening and walked back to the hotel in twos and threes. Mayor 2416, the tall black man who had been speaking Yoruba, kept pace with me. "I didn't think the gig was for real," he said quietly. "Now I wish it wasn't." We ate together that night and shared photos of our kids, his son at Oxford. I sighed, Elsabet in her robotics team jersey in Pennsylvania, where she lived with her mom. Elsabet dreamed of applying to Swarthmore, but all I could hope for was to purchase a few audit classes on my current credit. "It's not the worst gig I've had," I offered, then stuttered to a stop. I wasn't supposed to talk about that. Mayor 2416's name was Boladi Olwuli. He laughed as he reached for a bowl of spiced eggplant and then a wooden bucket of rice that the waiter had brought us. It's not the worst job I've had either. The worst was... His voice cut off. I'm not supposed to say. For a moment, I wondered if we worked for the same people. We ate quietly and were joined by Mayor 2389 and Mayor 2390, cousins from the same town in Guiyang. They'd become Chinese superstars and media influencers a few years ago due to the delicate filters they'd created for their social media photos. I realized I'd seen their faces before, but hadn't recognized them without the circlets of animated petals or the seaweed fronds and water-filled eyes. They didn't say much to us, but they helped us order more food, including a fish soup that came with individual bowls of spices. Then they took photos and edited them at the table before posting them to WeChat. I saw copies later. Even the soup had a floral filter. I went to bed late, having passed my time among visitors, not locals, and I resolved that the next day I'd see more of the area. But the next day passed much like the first, except that when I returned to my room, I found someone else in it. I didn't ask whether they were a mayor, too. The armband was very clear on their sleeve. I went up to the reception bot. This is wrong again. You gave someone else my room. You were given accommodations for 2 nights, 3 days, the bot said. The voice was gentle. It sounded a little like dispatch's voice. Your allowance has ended. The town has created an emergency strategy to help our mayor guests save on housing costs. You can either share a room here with other mayors-to-be, or you can find your own accommodations elsewhere. This was alarming. I tapped my watch, but it still displayed job not yet completed, and my per diem for the day. At least that was still accruing. It looked a little less impressive now that I was trapped here indefinitely, though. As panic rose in my chest, pressing outward like a large caged bird, I practiced the slow breathing we'd learned in economics class at my high school, only useful thing about that class. Breathe in. Consider yourself lucky to be able to work. Breathe out. Prepare to work. Yes, that was the ticket. Still, the questions remained. How can I complete a job when the previous employee won't leave it? How was I going to get back to my daughter in time to see her graduate? I'll take the shared option, I told the reception bot. It was especially important now that I knew how many we were, and easier, too. I'd met so many mayors from the line. I received a key code to room 251, next door to the room I'd originally bumbled into. There I found Boladi. Two Australian backpackers named Ted and Bob, mayors 2419 and 2424, who'd each accepted the gig as a way to get to China cheaply, and a poet and teacher, Mayor 2431, from eastern China, named Song. He wrote in his journal a lot. No one had very much to say. We made tea using the room kettle and drew coffee stirrer straws for the first ships sleeping on the bed or floor. When it was my turn, I got the floor. I fell asleep listening to the sound of the river, whispering, "Consider yourself lucky," and "Prepare." If I'd learned anything about myself from the worst gig ever that I'm not supposed to talk about, it's that I'm resilient and I have a strong sense of right and wrong. Mimi used to really like that about me, until I nearly ruined us with it. It's just not my nature to give up, especially when people are in trouble. No one seemed to notice that they were in trouble here, though. Not yet. Everyone's mostly happy getting their per diem, not having to take another job, Ted said at breakfast. We're saving up for a big trip when this is over. If it's ever over, Bob said. He looked at his watch. I'm starting to wonder. How come dispatch doesn't fire this mayor? I asked, remembering the crackle of gum as my removal terms were explained at the worst gig. The town manager, before she left to try and get help, said something was confused in the international contract language, Song said abruptly. The app was being very literal about the job description, and so is the new mayor. It turns out words and titles matter, and a lot of people here don't really seem to mind a little discomfort since they're getting paid. It may have been a small discomfort, but losing the ability to go anywhere rankled me. The gig required we report to the mayor's office until we completed the job, and the mayor liked having a line outside their office. It makes them look useful, Bolade said. So the next morning, Bolade and I started a small side hustle of holding various mayor-to-be's gig time watches so they could go visit other parts of the city, take time off if they wanted to, or, in one case, go home to see a sick relative for a few days. I couldn't believe someone hadn't thought of it before. Oh, someone did once, but it upset the mayor, a woman named Z, Mayor 2435, said from farther up. The longer I stayed in line, the better my translator app improved via machine learning. Someone tried to go to the airport, but when they got there, their passport was taken and they were sent back here to finish the job. They and the person who held their watch for them went into the mayor's office and didn't come out again. Mayors 2358 and 2379. Why did it upset the mayor? I asked nervously. No one answered. I could imagine how it might. A passport getting taken could eventually attract the wrong kind of attention, the kind that could get even a mayor in trouble, especially with a city manager trying to get help. Mayor 2328 has spies now, someone whispered, too fast for me to see who, but I thought it might be Mayor 2441 or 2442. You have to watch out, someone else said. Lalata and I stuck the gig time watches in our day packs and tried to look like individual data footprints, but we still helped people when they needed it. It worked for 5 whole days. Still, occasionally, I'd pay Xi or one of the cousins to hold my watch and Bolade's, and we'd wander through the town, looking out over the river to the water wheel that provided the town with power. We caught a movie in the modern theater on the main square, and once, a ballet. We tried to talk to shopkeepers and performers, but they saw our armbands and shied away. Doesn't the mayor ever go to these events? Bolade asked Xi on our return. Not 2328. This mayor hasn't left the office since they were installed, which is good. The town is a bit afraid of them. I couldn't imagine what would scare an entire town so much, especially not this town. Everyone seems so friendly. While on a bathroom break from the line, I got a call from Jin. There's a rumor on the news that Gig Time assigned too many mayors to your town, she said. Someone filmed your line with a drone camera and posted it internationally. Gig Time's denying it's a problem with the app or with their contract with the town of Densai. What's happening there? I'd seen the drone that morning drifting lazily above the square as several Miao women walked past in wooden shoes and red, richly embroidered skirts and jackets, their silver necklaces and headgear jingling like bells. I thought it was just a tourist cam. China's denying any problem, but also, Victor? I'm gigging at a new support desk and a couple crews are already requesting temps to fly drones for them, too. Be careful. Sounds like the app's got a bug at least. And tell me everything. I could snag a full-time job for the right details. I'll try to help, I said. But I didn't know what I could tell her except that we stood around a lot. I hadn't even seen the current mayor. Bolada and I hustled back to the line and called in as many people as we could who'd given us their watches. Some arrived expecting the line to have moved, but it hadn't. This is outrageous, a loud British voice said. Some of us have places to be. Some of us are fairly important people. It was more than obvious even before we saw Mayor 2405's red cheeks and nose and bloodshot blue eyes that he'd found a pub the minute he'd given us his watch. We called the waitress over and paid her to bring this mayor some strong red tea, hoping he wouldn't attract more attention. This still wasn't as bad as the worst gig ever, but it was getting there. But too late, another of the Brits and one Australian woman who'd been at the front of the line for over 2 months approached us and demanded the remaining watches. By whose orders? She objected. Those aren't yours. By the order of the mayor of Densai, the Australian said. This is a dangerous enterprise. You two come along also. She gestured at me and Bolade. Before I knew it, several black garbed city elders had confiscated all the remaining watches and were hustling us up to the front of the line, past our surprised companions and right up to the wood-paneled door. The drunk Brit, who was still with us, took it upon himself to knock. "Ceremony! It's important! I would have made an excellent mayor," he says. "It runs in my family." The others hushed him. The door swung open. It looked like I was going to meet the mayor for today. Maybe I would be able to help Jean after all. Inside the mayor's office, the lights were dim. The blue indigo hangings there had different designs on them. Robots, spaceships, and something that looked like a comet, all done in traditional batik style. A soft blue light emanated from the mayor's desk, where a glass dome tank sat, bell jar style, covering a large blue shrimp with a bird's beak. A watch was taped to the glass, and a gig time apt timer read, 122 days on job, negative 121 days remaining. Please contact your dispatch officer. "Greetings, citizens," Mayor 2328 said through the translator. I could hear sounds like fingernails on a chalkboard from inside the glass. This was now officially the worst gig I'd ever taken. One look at Bolade told me he felt the same way. Mayor 2328 wasn't human. Mayor 2328 was a blue-green, winged, bird-headed shrimp about 2 feet high and fatter than my fist around the middle. The mayor looked so very much like the creatures on the batiks that hung in their office, I wasn't shocked to learn later that they had sat for portraits on day two as part of their mayoral privilege. "How did you ever get this gig?" Bolade asked before I could. The shrimp turned in his direction and hissed. "We were visiting your planet to try the Chingamalong Paradise Amusement Park near the Guangzhou spaceport, as it claimed to celebrate all cultures. We didn't find ours represented, and so we thought to volunteer there. We were told all we needed to do to get a job was purchase this app." The shrimp gestured to the watch taped to its glass dome. As it turned, I could see a tiny pump system that was exchanging Earth's oxygen for something else inside the tank. Mayor 2328 almost floated in whatever gas was inside. "What we didn't count on is that your app does not let us choose what jobs we will take after the first choosing session. We have not yet been able to work at the park," the mayor said a little sadly. "However, we have found this to be an excellent gig." The officials in the room nodded. "It is an excellent gig, Mayor." The crawling feeling in my stomach returned. In the office's shadows, I noticed two figures hunched miserably over computers, screens glowing with regulatory statutes. An official blocked my view. "State your case. Don't distract Mayors 2358 and 2379 from their work." "Sir or Madam," I began with great ceremony, hoping to secure my freedom and that of my friend Bolade without winding up in the same straits as 2358 and 2379, "I plead for your pardon. We have nothing to do with any amusement park or really anything. We are just here for a gig and we would like to go home. We too are victims of economic circumstance." "Also," Bolade added, "we didn't know that saving places in the mayor's line was illegal." "It's not illegal yet," Mayor 2328 said. "Just annoying, but it should be illegal, that is." The creature paused for a moment. The tank's pump blinked, and a printer on the other side of the room shot out a piece of paper. One of the mayors in waiting picked it up. "And now it is illegal. And you should know the laws. Lack of education about another's culture's laws is not grounds for leniency." The mayor seemed to shrug, and I felt that wriggly feeling in my stomach extend to my arms and the back of my neck. "You could have educated yourself." "Listen here," I leaned over the desk, casting a shadow on the tank. "What gives you the right to tell us what to do? You're just a ceremonial..." The mayor's legs began to curl. "We view this position as having the utmost importance to future interstellar diplomacy," it said in outraged tones. Bolade cleared his throat. "Honored mayor, please excuse my friend. The situation is causing great strain among your constituents, not only the people who must keep this town running, but the growing number of mayors-to-be as well. Meanwhile, he shot me a look that was clearly, "Shut up, Victor." Mayor 2328 clicked its jaws, and the tank echoed with the slightly metallic sound as its legs relaxed. "You are correct. You will be among the last mayors," Mayor 2328 said to us. "You are both enterprising. I respect that. And you are timely. Today, I finally convinced the app's dispatch bot to stop sending us more mayors. Denzai no longer needs mayors for each day because they have me. It is a bit of a muddle because Gig Time and the country do not want to admit there were too many mayors, and so I am, in my own way, helping them make everything seem normal. But we do need entertainment for the rest of you. Dispatch isn't a bot, and the best entertainment would be sending us home," I said, thinking of Dispatch's laugh, of my friends, even of the hot shipping container apartment. I was ready to be done with this job. "I can't send you home. Only Gig Time can when you finish your jobs. I have no control over anything beyond Denzai. And it is a bot. A very realistic one, but it still obeys the rules. They replaced the human dispatcher on my first day in office for chewing gum. They fired her after they recorded her chewing gum, and now they use their recording to make the replacement bot seem more personable." That was terrible news. Worse, we had a new problem. If the app was bot-driven, it was operating on algorithmic logic, not human rationale. No one was going to fire Mayor 2328. "We can't complete our job until you file your report and resign." "Exactly," said Mayor 2328. "All of you future mayors will have to stay here in Denzai," the shrimp bird screeched. If you've ever imagined what a cackle must sound like to bird ears, or a frustrated squid might sound like to squid ears, I can assure you this was much worse. Mayor 2328 went on, "Since you will not be eligible for more gigs on the app, I will provide you with gigs. I somewhat regret my lack of understanding about the nuances of your economy when I took this position. Enough to be a good mayor, but not enough to give up the benefits of being mayor, especially not the first alien mayor on Earth." I could swear that inside its glass dome, the shrimp mayor was preening. "What about all the people here? What about the citizens of this region?" "They're getting used to it. You've seen the tapestries they are making now, and perhaps my success will eventually bring interstellar interest to your tiny planet. More prosperity and gigs for everyone. I have learned that there are towns all over this rock that need better mayors and other municipal officials. I'm going to need several assistants for social media on Interstellargram. Those twins with the filters, how far back in the line are they?" It was worse than I thought. What I'd been waiting in line for during the past week was a quick and easy job. Now it looked like the gig was much bigger, and I didn't want it at all, at least not alone. This town didn't need another mayor. It needed a hero, more than one preferably. Pilati and I looked at each other. He waggled his eyebrows. "Still not the worst gig ever." I completely agreed. But if we weren't careful, it might be our last gig ever. I never was one to give up, and neither, it seemed, was Pilati. I bet there were other mayors out there in line who felt the same way. All of us working together off gig might be able to stop Mayor 2328. And if we help stop it, we might actually help save the world, or at least get new gigs. This one sucked. When Mayor 2328 finally released us from their office, after many promises from us to help them with their new campaign, it was dark. The rest of the mayors-to-be in line had returned to their rooms. I pulled a newly bought scarf tight around my neck, fending off the chill breeze. The shop's lights were off. No one was about. The place looked like a diorama of a town without the people that brought it to life. As we walked, Bolotti's stomach growled. We'd only had tea and a half-dried fruit and nut nutrition bar each that day. The remains of a handful had slipped in my bag before the journey began. It had been drizzling for days, but tonight was clear. The stars were out, and the paving stones below our feet glittered in their reflection. We drew closer to the hotel, and I could smell the pungent odor of spice packets and rice being cooked in in-room kettles at the hotel. A shrill British voice was arguing with the reception bot. "Yet again, I demand my own room, and yet again, you deny me." We walked on, deciding to circle the main town square once more before going back to our tight-packed quarters. We left the hotel's bright lights behind for the softer glow of the moon on the square. To our surprise, Mayor 2431 sat near one of the square's statues depicting the town's first mythic firebird. His head was bowed over his journal. "What are you writing, friend?" I asked. We hadn't talked much, but Mayor Song had always been kind, making room on the floor for yet another mayor and sharing what food and local knowledge he had. "A history of the future," he responded, his eyes smiling behind his thick glasses. "This place has been here for so long, and it will remain, even after this city and its mayor. It is the people of a place who are the real story." Valadi inclined his head in agreement. "A poet mayor is a powerful leader." Song smiled. "So are enterprising mayors like yourselves." We walked on then, leaving Mayor 2431 to his thoughts. In the breeze, a small set of bells in one of the rooms above the tea shop on the square sounded clear and cold, lightly metallic. "What will we do?" I asked. "What we always do," Valletta answered. "Finish the job somehow." Our feet crunched the pavement. The lights of the Wanda Danzai Hotel appeared again. "Did you finish your worst job ever?" I asked. Valletta shook his head. "It nearly ruined me. But finishing it would have ruined me in a different way. I'm glad we get one refusal." I didn't press. "Mine was the same," I said, even though Gig Time North America wasn't big on refusals. More than a year before, I'd been sent to a part of the city where a machine decided who got medicine and who didn't, based on an algorithm. There was a room filled with medicines of all kinds that the machine could hand out if it decided a person was really in need. All I had to do was keep the machine fed with people's information, and the algorithm did the rest. I could have had that job for life, but I noticed very quickly that the algorithm wasn't giving anyone medicine. The room stayed filled with bottles, and people, sometimes whole families, went away without medicine. And so I stopped giving the machine data. I let it starve. If I'd quit the job, someone else would have come to do what I refused. So I sat there, day after day, for a week, not giving the machine anything, and giving anyone who asked medicine until the storage room ran empty. When Gig Time found out, Dispatch had nearly deleted my app, but Mimi had argued that I was burnt out and confused. She'd saved me, enough at least. She'd left, too, because my destroyed credit, paying back a percentage of the medicines, would have hurt hers and Elsabet's chances. And holding a family together with a broke dad who had no credit on Gig Time was nearly impossible. The worst gig ever still was. But this one was definitely weirdest. Starting the next day, Balade and Min Song and myself, and about 50 other mayors, began our revolt in many different ways. We arrived in line on time, as per our instructions, but we didn't wait patiently. We asked questions. We filed grievances. We loaded the mayor's office with paperwork that the mayor refused to sign. Once, we formed a line of dancing mayors, and watched, slightly embarrassed but hopeful for rescue, as tourists sent our images out into the world. Still, no news drones returned. We tried everything, but Mayor 2328 wouldn't budge. So we resorted to stronger methods. We might have rioted a little, once. That didn't work very well. None of us were used to rioting, and everyone kept glancing at their watches to see if they were losing credits. They were. But still, we stormed the office, a few of us, and grabbed the mayor's tank. I rifled through the office closet and found an old shovel. Though we tried, we couldn't break Mayor 2328's glass shell. We couldn't toss Mayor 2328 in the river, either. Well, Bolotti did manage that, but the mayor crawled out of the river, a fish in its mandibles, dragging its tank behind it, and then insisted all of the mayors to be go swimming with it. That was terrible and muddy. But we went along with it. The mayor had begun filing approval ratings and reviews on us every afternoon, If our ratings were excellent, we sometimes earned food from the restaurant or a room to ourselves for a night. I admit, sometimes I still had a weakness for duck eggs and congee. So we gave up rioting and tried public relations instead. We assembled groups of ourselves in eagerly waiting throngs, held beautiful ribbons in front of shops ready to be opened. Once we staged a poetry reading in hopes the mayor would make a proclamation. To no avail. We couldn't get Mayor 2328 to do any traditional mayoral things, especially not once the drones began leaving, when there was no sign of trouble at gig time and nothing more came from the mayor's office. The news freelancers got bored. No ribbon cuttings, no affixing of seals, just waiting in line. Everyone thought Mayor 2328 was worried about polishing their reputation, especially as they began to send messages home. They summoned the twins to their office more than once for filter consultations. The new severe lack of cameras didn't motivate them. Eventually, Mayor 2328 passed a law that banned all forms of unapproved social media, including drones, and threatened to lodge so many complaints about any gig-time contractors operating the drones that their credit would take a permanent hit. That didn't bring the drones back, of course. Except one drone. In a last message, which was only sound, Jean indicated it was hers. But Jean had little to film. There was nothing to see except the long line of mayors-to-be, filling Den's eye, and an occasional swim in the river. There certainly wasn't any tea tree planting going on, or proclamation signing. When a group of tea farm managers pressed past the mayors-to-be and petitioned the mayor for help, we saw our break. The tea farm is a prime economic driver for the region, one said. We're looking at a glitch in production, especially of white tea, a few years from now, if there are no new tea trees maturing. We oppose your actions in refusing to plant any more trees. All of us listened with great hope. Or perhaps that was hunger. But Mayor 2328 wasn't bothered by our insurgencies, the manager's anger, the petitions. Instead, they seemed to like them. What good is a ruler without opposition, they said. Finally, on day 15 of my non-mayorship, Jin rang me on my watch. I could barely hear her. How are you doing? She asked. Any progress? When will something happen? She was the one who told me the news cycle was forgetting us entirely, shifting away from the story of too many mayors to everything else that was happening in the world, that the local government had quelled the smallest rumor she had managed to start about an alien mayor when the city manager returned to wave to the camera. The city manager was a young woman with a beautiful new haircut. She wore a dark jacket and skirt and twisted a piece of paper nervously in her hands. I couldn't get anyone's attention, she told us after her public appearance. Gig time is determined that there is no error, and everyone is too invested in gig time being perfect. I had to come back here before my own funds ran out. Now I have to work for the mayor, too. We were in such a remote location, no one had realized there was something strange going on in Denzai for a very long time before I arrived. Without any major developments here, the world was distracted from a seemingly minor story. There was always something much more interesting and disastrous going on elsewhere. Worse, gig time didn't want there to be anything wrong. So there wasn't. Mayor 2328 began to assist gig time on that effort, making several of us post news each day from the town that said everything was ordinary. We couldn't refuse or they'd crash our gig ratings and our local ratings. We'd be ruined as well as hungry. We were already ruined. While we did their broadcast, Mayor 2328 began drafting letters home to bring more mayors like themselves to Earth. They told me that they wished to leverage the money they were making from Gig Time's per diem, that they planned to buy a share of Gig Time, to hire others like them to join them as small-town potentates, to tie all of human commerce to in-kind service to the mayors. We have to do something more, I whispered to Mayor 2437. This is an invasion. What can we possibly do? We don't have weapons, and we're stuck here. Not technically, I looked around for spies. We need to trick Mayor 2328 into completing their duties, planting the tree, filing the report. But they won't. They've refused time and again, Baladi whispered. As a normal function of the algorithm, sure, but if they think it's a different kind of tree and not a report at all? Or what if they think it's a diplomatic engagement? I sent a short message to Jin and hoped. Jin had said her job this week included editing text chyrons for the hub that handled all the major news sector's feeds. She'd be parsing major events into tiny phrases that caught the eye for a moment and stayed in the mind after they'd passed off the screen. Exactly what we needed. Within a day, our watches crawled with mentions of secret interstellar diplomacy happening in far western China. A leaked image of the mayor's plan, ringed in flowers, appeared on WeChat. Soon there was an influx of news media, at first just drones, then real people too, two of them with assistants. Their teams clustered in the lobby of the hotel, waiting for rooms. Several of us moved to an empty apartment over the shops in the square to give them the space in the hotel. We watched hungrily as they ate at the breakfast buffet in the morning. Finally, the delegation of news media, one wearing a BBC hat, another a fleece jacket, oh, did that look warm, emblazoned with CNN HK, all full-time employees, arrived at the municipal office. We, all the mayors-to-be, were there waiting. We saw a news flash that there was going to be a ceremony between worlds in Danzai, they said. We didn't believe it, but then we saw the line of mayors here and realized something must be happening. The newscaster showed the mayor's people the chyron, on a loop, on their watches. Every news organization had picked up Jin's words. More drones were starting to hover. What do I do? Mayors 2,329 through 2,348 overheard the screech through the thin wooden door. No one answered. Mayor 2,431 tapped on the door and said, "Whatever you do, I'll write your story." There was a long pause. Finally, Mayor 2,328 called Bolade and me in. It floated in its tank, blue and leggy. None of my friends have replied to my invitation yet, and if I blow my first diplomatic opportunity, none of them will want to come. This could be my moment or my downfall, the first alien mayor or the laughingstock of the galaxy. I need your help. Bolade and I looked at each other. How? Mayor 2431 says your Earth diplomacy requires planting a tree. Something about roots. But I can't plant a tree, Mayor 2328 said. I don't have arms. What do they expect me to do? I need enterprising ideas. We were ready. Every mayor-to-be had volunteered to help. Well, volunteered was putting it lightly. We all demanded to help. Still, since there were so many of us, we couldn't travel by van to the tea farm. There were too many of us. It would need to be done closer to the municipal office. After much discussion, we went down to the river's edge, a long line of drones trailing behind, plus the BBC and CNN reporters, each hoping for a glimpse of an interstellar ceremony, each a little worried the mayors were only going swimming again. But then I produced the shovel that I'd found in the utility closet, and each mayor-to-be dug a small bit of the hole. Finally, several more mayors-to-be carried Mayor 2328 to a small dais beside the hole. The shrimp bird mayor used an anti-gravitational device he kept inside his tank to lift the tree and put it in the hole right beside the river. Now I will sign the decree naming this tree a symbol of peace and prosperity for the village, the mayor read from the teleprompter Bolade held. It gave a low screech. Hang on, the deadpan whispered to the line of mayors-to-be. What decree? This one, the city manager said, and held out a document. I've prepared it for you and countersigned it. Soon we can all live happily together in peace. The mayor grunted, but a side of the tank slipped open. We all coughed at the smell of methane, but the mayor extended a pseudopod and inked the paper. As soon as it did that, the GigTime app strapped to its container blinked green. Job complete! Every mayor-to-be within earshot sighed, relieved. The city manager did too. Mayor Song smiled and made a note in his journal. What? No! Former Mayor 2328 shouted as his transport home was summoned. You can't! The voice of dispatch, which I hadn't heard in a long time, was music to my ears. Congratulations, Mayors 2,329 through 2,451. Your job is also complete. Excellent work with the tree planting and declaration filing. Dispatch kept rolling, unbothered by the near invasion. I swear I heard a bubble pop. The news channels reported later that the temporary employee who had edited the false interstellar diplomacy chyrons was never found, despite offers of a reward. And of course there had been a fair bit of interstellar diplomacy, just not the kind the news channels were eager for. But those of us who'd stood in the line of mayors and saved the world were rewarded. Gig Time gave us each our accrued per diems and back pay for every day we'd stood in line. They also offered us permanent jobs as dispatchers and managers, since automated dispatchers hadn't worked out so well. I could afford the camping trip to the State of Disney. Even better, I had more than enough credit to pay for tuition at Swarthmore, not just some hourly audits. Plus, dispatcher was a good job with benefits, and after a while, I asked if Jin could share half of mine, just so I could have time to spend with my daughter. My daughter, who was going to college. At my desk at work, I looked at her photo proudly as I made a cup of red tea every other morning, thinking about my brief, maybe 1 minute, stint as mayor of Danzai, and how a whole bunch of us had saved the planet, and how no one would ever really know, and how that was actually pretty okay by me. The tea tasted like the past and the future all blended together. It tasted like what lasts when all of our circumstances fall away. Or maybe that was just the jet lag. I spent some time now traveling here and there as a representative of Gig Time Earth. Mayor 2328 was an excellent interstellar salesperson, and we were all going to be very rich someday with Gig Time going universal. And the town of Danzai? The tea farm? The surrounding villages? They decided to let their contract with Gig Time lapse in favor of a regional council who would nominate mayors for a day and fire them too when necessary. They still invited in celebrities, including holders of cultural memory, who then went out into the world to talk about the history of the region and its people. Mayor 2431 had been right. It was the place and its people that made the history, not the ceremonial trappings. The other mayors and I kept in touch. Baladi went on to do very well for himself in a variety of enterprises, as did the twins. No one's heard from the red-faced mayor in a long time. And occasionally, I still looked at the regional ceremonial gigs just to see what was available for the memories, even if the app was reluctant to let me take on any more jobs. I never found anything quite like being mayor for the day. In my downtime, which I had more of than I needed once Elsabet was in college, I'd started volunteering. Pretty soon I knew I'd have enough hours to download the system.
Thanks for listening to Asimov's Spotlight, a feature of Asimov's Science Fiction Magazine. If you liked what you've heard, consider subscribing to Asimov's. We're available in print and digital. And please stop by again next month to hear another exciting story chosen from our pages.